and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Yes, it's 2019 now, and what a year it's been in football so far.
It has. I can't even say you say that every year, but it has been pretty good so far.
Yeah, so it's only a few days old. And, you know, we've had loads of football. Obviously, we've had the FA Cup over the weekend, but we had a load of football over Christmas and New Year, didn't we, as well?
Tons of it.
Yeah, especially we had the biggest game ever of all time, ever in the world of history.
Ever. It was such a big game.
It was.
It barely fit into my TV screen.
I know, it was so big. I think the numbers came in, it was actually watched by 1.4 squillion people.
1.4 squillion people.
Yeah.
Is that, those are the official figures?
Yeah,
official viewing figures.
Yeah.
As provided by the Premier League.
Yeah.
You must have had no problem selling advertising for that.
No, I didn't think so. No one hits a squillion these days, do they?
Not many.
No,
not
many. The Doctor Who New Year's Day special, perhaps. But
maybe.
Maybe a few episodes of Corrie, but yeah. No.
They used to do it all the time in the 70s. I think when JR got shot, I think about like 7.8 squillion watched
that. Well, it's interesting because when it came out, it was the highest rated TV programme in American TV history up to that point. And it was then beaten only a few weeks later by the final episode of MASH.
Wow. Ah. Mm. How many squillions did they get, do you reckon? Oh,
goodness knows.
Maybe it's a good squillion.
Yeah. Well, of course, January is a month for big numbers as well, isn't it? Because obviously the transfer window opens and everyone is in panic mode because obviously all the people they signed in the summer have turned out to be rubbish. And so they have to go and buy some new people because obviously that's just what you do. But before we get on to talking about people being sold and the people who are doing the selling, we do have to sort of make a quick correction to one of the doors in the advent calendar. Now, advent calendars, obviously, it's an annual tradition. And of course, we don't make a habit of making predictions on the podcast.
Right.
We don't make predictions at all on the podcast, ever.
Well, and this is the reason why.
Unfortunately, we do. Well, this is what the advent calendar is all about. It's how we look forward and what we think is going to happen. And obviously, well, if you were listening, you'd have heard this.
It's Jose Mourinho.
Well, Jose Mourinho. Well, by the time this podcast comes out, he might not have a job, won't he?
No, well, he'll be there at the end of the season. Or he'll be there until it becomes impossible for them to qualify for Europe. But he's going nowhere.
Mourinho would be too expensive to sack. And there isn't really anybody around to replace him that would arguably improve United.
Now, of course, it's very easy in hindsight to say, isn't it funny, all those people getting it all wrong about Jose Mourinho and about how comfortable he was going to be in his job. But these things happen, don't they?
Well, yes, they certainly happen in football. We probably should have anticipated it.
Yeah, but they don't usually happen within 12 hours of us laying this to MP3, does it, really?
It was bad timing on our part. Few people, I think, could have genuinely predicted that it was going to happen. At least that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, the worst thing was that it happened at such an early time in the morning that it was great for all the journos because they had all day to write their long think pieces about it for the papers the next day.
Of course, I'm saying how inevitable it was and how it was always going to happen. You know, as a they were just as like, oh, blimey, didn't see that happening.
Well, there was me grumbling away, editing a podcast I knew was out of date. Anyway.
But you did okay to drop in Mr. Babbage.
I thought so. Yeah. I mean, it's been a few years since Mr. Babbage made an appearance, and it was usually Chris that used to add that sound effect. But, Mourinho gone.
Yeah.
Oh, will we ever see him again, do you think?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably sometime next week in Madrid, I should think. That's not a prediction, by the way. That's just a joke. It's just an aside.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that for certain, but it's been suggested that, in fact, that it may well be that he'll be coming back because they're going to be making a change. They lost again yesterday. They lost to Real Sociedad at home yesterday, which I watched some of that game, and they were pretty terrible. So I think there's going to be a change. And there isn't really that many other people about, so it's whether or not Mourinho will take the caretaker role, so to speak. Will he take an interim coach?
What? Do you mean while he's waiting to become Inter Miami coach?
Yes, he'll become the interim Real Madrid coach and then the non-interim Inter Miami coach.
But he'll be succeeding the interim coach at Real Madrid, who's already caretaking.
It's probably fair to say there's quite a lot of rimming going on at Real Madrid. not the good kind of rimming either.
There's a good kind.
I'll show you some websites where people are enjoying it, apparently. Anyway, moving on to the topic. a big shock. I think that it's an interesting move going for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, given his previous record as a manager in the Premier League. But at the same time, not an entirely difficult to understand, given his relationship with the football club, which he's obviously ex-player. But also he maintains a good relations with the club. He's always been a friend of Manchester United in the years since he's departed. So
yeah, indeed. So I wonder if we can expect him to sign a half a dozen Norwegian youth players like he did for Cardiff when he was in charge of them. Mm. Do you think that that's on his key shopping list in January? Who do you think he's going to get in?
Well, my knowledge of the Scandinavian football market is not what it should be, I think it's fair to say. But given some of the articles I've been reading over the last few days, I suggest there's going to be a lot of Norwegians, Scandinavians. I think it's going to be the biggest influx of Vikings since about the 9th century.
We would have to caveat a lot of this conversation if we're going to go, if you've been reading the same article as I have.
Well, it's the one that Terry sent both of us, so probably yes.
Talking about the involvement of Jim Solbakken,
yes,
as a super agent, and gets himself involved with his best friend Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. The sort of rise of the super agent and the super agent being heavily involved in one club is now a growing thing, isn't it, Terry? I mean, obviously, there has been sort of murmurings and ensconced glances towards Wolves' recent success.
Yes, that is an interesting case because George Mendes is the super agent who seems to be supplying almost all the new transfers for Wolves and has been since that club was taken over by that Chinese consortium, I think it is. And so they've clearly made some kind of arrangement with him that he will be working, essentially recruiting players that would all appear to be on his books. I don't know how this affects things because, like, for example, in the Norwegian FA, there are rules about brokering deals on either side, so representing the club and representing the player in a transfer.
Yeah.
And you know, you're not allowed to be able to do that, not one person. I'm assuming that it must work somewhat differently in England because, it does appear that, you know, George Mendes is the agent of this person, but also is probably actually working on behalf of the club in order to broker this deal.
Now, with himself.
With himself.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what it seems like on the outside. Now, I'm sure the truth, the reality is significantly more nuanced, and that's not the case. And I'm probably being very, very crude in that. But certainly that's what it appears to be. And, you know, it's difficult, you know, not to escape the feeling that perhaps Mr. Mendes is getting a very, very good deal out of this. Now, that said, Wolves seem to be consenting about the whole thing. They're quite happy with it. And we've just come out of watching part of the second half of the FA Cup game. And they're currently, as we speak, beating Liverpool 2-1.
Yes.
And they are a cracking team to watch. So from the other side of it is, you know, Wolves are a newly promoted team, but they're comfortable mid-table and they play some decent football. So and some cracking players. I mean, Ruben Neves, absolutely wonderful player. So,
yeah.
You know, there's definitely upsides, benefits to it, certainly from the aesthetic point of view.
Yeah, and they've taken advantage as well of there being a lot of unsettled Portuguese players this summer who have quite happily come to the Premier League and are doing very well. We're used to agents in football now. Well, we should be anyway, shouldn't we? But they are often seen as the bogeymen of clubs, aren't they? The ones that the managers like to moan about when it's their player who looks like he wants to have a substantial uplift in his contract or when he just wants to leave the club and he's the best player by far. Sunderland are going through this at the moment, aren't they?
Well, they've been going through it for the last few years. When you look at Jack Rodwell, you look at Dilipoji and Kone and all the other the guys that didn't want to be there and had their agents in their ears and didn't bother turning up and getting sacked and things like that. So, the most current case is Josh Madger, who is a wonderful young player. He's only 20 years old. We picked him up about 3 or 4 years ago when he was unattached. He'd just become unattached from Fulham. Anyway, regardless, we picked him up as a former Fulham player, brought him in and gave him his chance, and he's got 15 goals this season, albeit in Tier 3, but he's got 15 goals this season and doing very well. And I think there was an acknowledgement of that, and the club decided to give him an improved contract. His current deal ends at the end of the season, so they upped his salary. I mean, I don't necessarily believe all the figures that I see in the papers. And as well as that, I always think it's really strange that they quote people's Yeah. Salary. I mean, who leaks these things out? It's ridiculous.
It's obviously the agents do.
Must be. Anyway, so the agent clearly leaked that he was going to be on £10,000 a week, which for a 20-year-old is, well, for a 50-year-old would be wonderful. So as I understand it, he had told the manager, Jack Ross, on midweek he was definitely going to sign this contract, and that was a done deal. And then the club finds out via Sky TV, who I'm assuming found out from the agent, that he's not going to sign it. And then there was this whole kind of Twitter war going on between Stuart Donald, the Sunderland owner, and various media outlets who've been told different things. So it was a complete mess on Friday.
Yeah.
No one really knew what was going on. He still played on Saturday against Charlton and played very, very well. And as I understood it, he wouldn't have taken part if his head wasn't in the game, if you like. And it clearly was, because he came on and did well. And I think the fans were very restrained, actually, because they just like him to stay. Which I'm not going to make a prediction after the Mourinho thing.
Yeah.
But it could well just be, a part of the play by the agent just to get a few more quid out of him. I mean, he's only proven it, third tier level.
Yeah.
I'm not taking anything away from him. He's a fantastic player. He's really, really good, and hopefully he'll crack on and improve himself at every level he plays at. But he's only proven at that level, and some of them, the amounts that have been thrown around for a player that's only got 6 months left on his contract from teams that probably wouldn't play him anyway is crazy. It's probably just newspaper talk. I mean, I even heard that Roy Hodgson said today, "I've never even heard of Josh Manager, but I'm being linked with a £5 million move for him." We're not going to spend £5 million on someone I've never heard of. So, which completely threw the Mirror's article into disrepute. So, yeah, it is quite interesting. But, it's clear that the agent has been weaving a narrative in the press to hopefully get a few more quid for, well, you'd think for his player, but really probably for himself.
I think, Terry, when we think about agents, I don't know about you, but I still think of agents as somewhere between Eric Monster Hall and Nicholas Anelka's brother. I don't personally know any agents. I'm sure they're fine individuals, the real professional ones. But I think that's always how they're being projected on there. And obviously, with what Jan said, I mean, this is a classic example, isn't it, of when agents get the bad press, and yet they're the ones giving the press a lot of this information, or seemingly. Mm. It's getting there somehow, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in Madge's case, it's an easy one to figure out, because if his contract is up at the end of the season, I mean, any self-respecting agent will be going, "But mate, you're bang in form, you're young. You know, you can easily play at a next level up. You can probably double the wages you're being offered just by staying put until the end of the season and then moving to another club." And it's in his interest to spend the rest of the next half of the season just doing precisely that, banging in the goals. Mm. And then we would get to, hopefully, if we get Sunderland up, and then probably find another contract as a free agent. And indeed, we'll possibly get even more money, because the signing on fee will probably be better because the club won't have the burden of having to pay a transfer fee. So actually, if you look at it from that point of view, you can completely understand why Josh Madger has taken that decision, or rather has followed the advice of his agent, if that's how it went down. I mean, agents do publicise these things. They do talk to the press, and you can completely understand why they would do that. I mean, that for me, that's just PR. I don't necessarily think that there's anything nefarious or evil or unpleasant about it. It's just simply doing your best for your player and indeed for yourself. You look at it from Jan's point of view, from the point of view of the club, it's a bit unpalatable. But, at the same time, I mean, this is kind of how things are going. Players are entitled to try and earn as much money as they possibly can in what is a very, very short career.
Yeah.
Remember, Josh Badger was rejected by Fulham, and he had to go back into the Kinetic Academy. Mm. Run by our very own Whiteleaf manager, Harry Hudson. Mm.
Yeah.
And had to restart his career. I mean, if things had gone differently, he could be playing non-league football now. He could be playing for Whiteleaf. I can't hold it against the lad for thinking, well, I'm sitting on opportunity now to, sort myself out. I'd be minded to maybe take a bit of a chance and go for it. But I don't imagine that.
Yeah. There is that balance, though, isn't there? Because obviously supporters of the club or any club are going to look at them and say, "Oh, well, this is the club that gave you that opportunity, and now you're throwing that in our face." But you're right, Terry. If he hadn't worked out, Sunderland wouldn't have given two hoots about not renewing his contract.
Yeah.
If he'd only scored two or three goals this season, they might have given him a new contract for, you know, tuppence halfpenny a week. It is a fine balance, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the clubs always play hard done by with these things. But if you look at the way that youth football works, you know, you could have somebody that was that's signed up by the club, you know, as a schoolboy, and maybe moves to the other end of the country with his family, and then gets to 16, 17, and the club just go, no, you're not good enough. Yeah. That's it, and cut them loose, and they're that cutthroat. And there's no safety net for these lads. Yeah. You know, they just get dropped, and that's it, and they have to go and start their life somewhere else. That doesn't really make it to the public, but it happens all the time. It's really cutthroat.
Yeah.
But when the players get a little bit of power, and to be fair, they're dealing with multi-million-pound organisations, they need some representation. Whether they, you know, whether they, it should be in the form it's in, I don't know. Maybe we'll get to that. But they need some representation, because when they were kids, you know, a lot of them that are playing now will have been dumped.
Yeah.
And maybe a lot of them just don't get back on the wagon and get stuck back in, and that's a real shame. So it's cutthroat both ways, really, isn't it?
All clubs, when they take on players, they do so in the firm knowledge that most of them will never get into the first team of the clubs that they've taken them on.
Yeah.
I mean, a handful might, maybe not even a handful, maybe one or two in each year, maybe. There'll be another handful after that who might well, depending on the size of the club, might well generate revenue for them by being not good enough for the club, but good enough to sell, to make a profit on, or to you know, offset the investment. And the rest of them will, yeah, just be cast out. I don't have any sympathy for football clubs in situations like this, because they're clever people themselves, and, you know, they're quite prepared to cast aside players, you know, when it suits them. So, I mean, if it turns out that the player is casting the club aside, then, well, tough shit.
Yeah.
I mean, if Madger scores another 10 goals or 15 goals between now and the end of the season, Sunderland will be promoted.
Yeah.
I would say that that's payment enough, personally.
And then Sunderland will probably, and then as a Championship club, will then probably pay him whatever his agent wants to keep hold of him.
Yeah. So, although that could totally happen as well. In which case, they're in the Championship, they've got more budget, and then they can make it 20,000 or whatever, and make in there. So, I mean, you know, I think that would be fine. When people didn't understand why Dortmund didn't let Lewandowski go when he signed his pre-contract at Bayern Munich, and it was like, well, we're in the Champions League, we could get to the final of the Champions League, he's going to go, you know, with half a season left, we'll keep him, let him run down his contract, because we know the player's a good pro and that he'll do his best.
Yeah.
And he did. And there's no reason to assume why Madger would be, well, he certainly would be, what would be really daft of him would be for him to have his head turned and in him to go, you know, into a strop and not play, because that's the worst thing he needs. What he needs to do now is he needs to be absolutely on it, because he's actually taking a chance.
Yeah.
He gets kicked up in the air in the next game, does his ACL in, that contract is being whisked away from him, whatever happens.
Yeah.
He is taking some risks.
Yeah.
He is. I mean, I think as well, he'd probably look around some of the players he'd seen leave the club in the summer, Didier Ndong, Dilip Bodji and Jack Rodwell, all of who listened to their agents. And all of who now, well, I think a couple of them, well, they've all found clubs now, but not to the stature that they thought they were going to find them. And Dong and Jilabodji were sacked by the club and have had to sign contracts to say that they'll pay back part of the transfer fee when they join the new clubs. So it can go the other way as well. You can listen to your agent and get it, and it can go horribly, horribly wrong. And Rodwell's, I think, is he training with Blackburn now?
He's at Blackburn.
But he's not really doing much with them, so
As you say, this is a very, very difficult position to be in. I mean, it's fine if you're someone like Aaron Ramsey and you've got a worldwide profile getting to the stage of your contract when you're probably coming up very much like Robin Van Persie. This is his big contract coming up, so it needs to be a good one. I've got no problem with Arsenal saying to him, well, this is what we're going to pay you, because we know we could probably get a player in for this wage who would probably contribute as much to the side as you do, rather than the double figure that he actually wants, which is what he could easily go and get somewhere else as a free agent. Whereas people think, well, okay, I don't have to spend £50 million on Aaron Ramsey or whatever his market rate is at the moment. And so it's a situation where you think, well, everyone wins here except the fans who like Aaron Ramsey and they want to see him playing at the club week in, week out.
Yeah.
But we do have to take these fan blinkers off and be able to think, well, look, this is the actual person you're talking about. This is someone's career. I felt the same with Robin Van Persie when he left, when he had the opportunity to leave. It was the best thing for him. The trouble is there was very few clubs that were willing to actually take him on. The reason Man United got him was because Chelsea and City didn't want him because he was never going to see out his contract, and he never did with United. They got a season and a half out of him, a really great season and a half out of him. Mm. But they had to give him a 4-year contract for that. And that's the negotiation power that you get as a player, and as well with a good agent as well to go along with it. That really hit home for me, I think, how good an agent can be for the individual player, not for the club, which brings us back to the super agent thing, when a super agent is sat on both sides.
Yeah.
Thinking back to the whole Tevez Mascherano thing.
Kia Drabjian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we know this sort of thing happens all the time in South America.
Yes. It was the first time it had happened in England that we were aware of, anyway, certainly on that scale.
Yeah.
And can you remember the absolute, in shock?
Yeah.
I mean, I was shocked. I couldn't believe that deal had gone through. I couldn't believe that West Ham, it was press conference.
But then again, it wasn't a deal because they weren't owned, but they were basically on loan, weren't they?
They were. The licences were owned by the agent and they were effectively out on loan to West Ham. It was a very, very, very bizarre situation. Yeah. But I mean, one that, as you say, is not uncommon, and one and we continue to see.
It confused matters so much then, doesn't it, really? Because it was something that we weren't used to, and it was difficult for people to get their heads around. I think what is bringing it into sharp focus as well at the moment is the amount of young talent there seems to be around in Europe. Very, very young players who are extraordinarily talented and already being labelled with huge price tags. I mean, but Magic's contract is one thing for for a third tier player, but when you look at someone like Jadon Sancho and the eye-watering sums that are being dreamt up for his, well, as far as the press is concerned, inevitable transfer to one of the super rich clubs in the summer, you probably read a lot more articles than I do about him. I mean, like, what has been the range of price tags that have been going on him at the moment?
Well, I mean, certainly I'd say anything from 50 million or perhaps even up to, 100 million, I think, depending on when he goes.
Yeah.
Still his first full season. And I think it's probably anticipated that he would stay for another season. But such has been his impact, particularly if Dortmund win the league, then there'll be tremendous pressure, I would imagine, under Dortmund from other clubs to take him now. And I think that Dortmund would really want to have him for two full seasons.
Well, and it's not as if
as much as they can out of him before inevitably moving him on. Yeah,
and it's not as if they need the money because they've just got 64 million from Chelsea, haven't they?
Yeah, but this is Dortmund's business model. As I've said before, more or less, this is their business model. They develop players, they bring in the best that they can possibly bring in. And then they train them and they work with them and they develop them and they give them the minutes and they act as a finishing school for top class young talent. And then they move them on. And I suspect that this is the arrangement you get. It doesn't always happen. They signed Alexander Isak, who was Sweden's new Zlatan, and he's done nothing. And it backfires in other ways, like Ousmane Dembele, who went prematurely because he refused to play. He refused to train. I mean, he said, "You're moving me on to Barcelona," and that's flattened. I don't think there are too many people who have watched Barcelona would argue that with the fact that he left too soon for Barca. He should have stayed at Dortmund, where he would have got more minutes, more patience, and been developed, because it's not quite worked out for him. Anyway, that aside, that's sour grapes. But Pulisic is a really interesting one, because you've got, maybe not exactly the same kind of player, but you've got at Chelsea, you've got Callum Hudson-Odoi, who is the subject of three transfer bids from Bayern Munich, who want to bring him over to Germany and play for them. Then they'll play him. They want him. They're not just, this isn't a Dale Jennings job. They want to put him in the first team and they want to play him. And yet he can't get into his own team's first team. But then they've gone and signed Pulisic. And the thing that is weird about that is that Pulisic has lost his place to Sancho. So, I mean, there's no question about Pulisic's abilities, and he will have been heavily scouted, tracked, I would imagine, for a very long time by Chelsea. He is their guy, and he's the guy that they want. So I doubt this is not a spontaneous decision. This is not a Sarri signing. I mean, he's not there for that. This is a decision that Chelsea have made. So they've got faith that he's the right guy. But if you would look at it strictly on the basis of this season's form, he hasn't featured that much. And when he hasn't played that well. It's interesting because he came to the fruition at Dortmund just at a time when Dortmund were losing their way under Peter Bosz and under Peter Stöger. And this season, since they've, under Lucien Favre, they've found their way back again. They've refreshed the squad. They've brought in some new players. And Pulisic has suddenly found himself left out and a peripheral figure. And now he's moving on. So it's usually a different one. Usually in situations like this, they're absolutely smoking hot and they're a real loss to the club and to the team. But on this occasion, actually, it's not actually that bad a deal. In fact, it works out perfectly for Dortmund because he stays on at the club for the remainder of the season as cover on loan, so that when Sancho inevitably does drop in form, and he will, he's 18, then Pulisic will be able to come in and hopefully be able to plug that gap so that Dortmund have still got the best chance of winning the league. And then off he goes. So if it all works perfectly well, Dortmund could win the league, Pulisic could be parading his Bundesliga medal at the end of the season, and then off he goes to Chelsea, hopefully to really to restart his career, believe it or not.
At 20 years old.
So it is a strange one, but I'm not taking issue at all with Chelsea's decision. I mean, he's a fine player, and like I said, they will have looked at him for a long time. So his current form will be, I think, immaterial to them, because they'll all know that this is the guy they want. And I'm assuming that he was going to be the new Eden Hazard when presumably Eden Hazard goes to Real Madrid or wherever, presumably in the summer, because you would think that that's got to happen, because Real Madrid badly need to make some signings. And that's the other thing, of course, as well.
Of course.
Once it becomes apparent that they are in the market for players, then...
Yeah, I mean, how bad can Real Madrid get before they start spending £500 million?
If they've got the money, then I think this is about as bad as they can get. I mean, I think that they will be going for the players that they want in the summertime by hook or by crook.
Yeah, and that will, of course, start the merry-go-round off, because once Hazard goes from Chelsea, they have to bring someone else in as well. But even though they've got Pulisic, they'll bring someone else in as well, inevitably.
Yeah, a bit like we saw with Neymar a few years ago.
Exactly, yeah. When the whole thing just starts turning. And then the transfer fees go up again, then the agents start rubbing their hands with glee, and then they start talking to the papers saying, well, you know, if he's worth 70 million, my player's worth 90 million, and I know someone who will pay that money for them. Yeah, who?
Wouldn't you like to know?
That's for the ITKs to know, that one. Yeah. Oh, well, I suppose, but the whole thing just does keep all the pages filled, doesn't it?
Certainly does. That's what this all is, really. I mean, it's part of the soap opera of football, isn't it?
Yeah.
The transfer windows and the transfer speculation is what sells newspapers, but everyone loves it. People genuinely do love it. It sells newspapers, and people watch Sky and the other broadcasters as well when they're talking about these things, because people genuinely love it.
Yeah.
And I have to admit to being a sucker to it myself. I mean, I check the actual newspapers on my phone in the morning, like the review of them, and then the next thing I do, once I've decided, you know, the world's not about to end in the real world, I go and check my other real world and just see what transfer speculation is on the BBC website. I do that every day. Ooh, he's going there. Really? Wouldn't that be great? Well, I was like, Newcastle are in for Maggio. I'm like, those bastards. That was this morning's.
So we are all suckers for it, though.
We are definitely all suckers for it. But it's exciting, and it's glamorous, and there's a lot of money attached to it, and it does make it interesting. And people outside of the sport probably look down their noses a bit at it. And you can kind of understand why, really, when you look at some of the amounts. But the reality is, it does make it more interesting.
It's important as well, if you love the game, if you have an interest and take a vested interest in the game, and you're interested in how the game is run, and you know, and its future and its future prosperity, then these stories are also interesting. I mean, you know, maybe from a different slant, you can be concerned about the amount of speculation, the amount of money that's spent, but I mean, you know, we've been concerned about the amount of money that's been spent in the transfer market for as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
And almost certainly even longer than that. I'm pretty certain when I read Tommy Lawton's autobiography, there was in more than a few chapters about the spiralling costs of transfers and players back then. And that was sort of like, you know, just after the Second World War. So it was ever thus. There's a feeling that perhaps things have ramped up. I think since the Neymar transfer, there's this feeling that things have ramped up to another level.
Mm.
And it's going back to what we were talking about, nation states buying football clubs.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, and that suggests that the intensity level's moved up. And this also is why I think that there's concern from the likes of Real and Bayern Munich and Barca and, you know, the traditional big clubs who are thinking, you know, where our thunder's being stolen, our prospects are being hampered by PSG, by Manchester City. I think that's why, you know, there's a lot of pressure on UEFA to act against Manchester City in light of the Football League's revelations about their spending and their ways around the FFP regulations and the talk of the ban being a real thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if that actually happened.
Yeah.
Because, you know, UEFA probably feel they are traditionally in the camp of the traditional superpowers of European football, and that isn't Manchester City. that isn't PSG. These are the nouveau riche, the you know, the invaders, so to speak.
The ones that are upsetting the apple cart.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been reading blogs for a long time, and a lot of the narrative of a lot of people, and in the press as well, has over the last 20 years is, oh, well, the bubble's going to burst any moment. Then that's it. Well, football will just go back to some kind of pre-war status of £1,000 transfer fees. It's not going to happen, is it?
No.
But you do get the impression that where there had been ballooning transfer fees in the past, that has flattened out a bit. And I remember when in the late 70s, early 80s, when we went up to £1 million in England for the first time, Trevor Francis and all that. And then it went up to about close to 2 million. And then it stayed like that for about 10 years. And then it's only started at the end of the 80s, sort of started building back up again.
Mm.
But you can't see it at the moment. It just seems to be this constant increase over and over and over again. Is there a bubble going to burst, or do you feel that? Well, I mean, we sit with the TV money. The TV money, they're already saying, this can't go on forever. We're not getting the money back for this anymore.
Yeah.
So we're not going to give you that increase. So if they can't get the increase from the TV money, where is the increase going to come from, apart from state sponsorship?
Yeah, I think you might see a contraction. When you might see the TV money becoming a bit more sensible, but it's still going to be colossal.
Yeah.
You know, if it goes down by £1 billion,
yeah,
it's still billions of pounds.
Yeah.
So, you know, the clubs are only spending with the money that's sloshing around. I mean, with the exception of PSG and Manchester City, who clearly don't need that money, you know, the rest of the guys are spending that money because they've got that money. And that's what's flowing around in the football ecosystem. So that might shrink a little bit as the TV companies say, we're not getting our money back, I think.
Yeah.
If that's indeed what does happen. But if it doesn't, then it will just continue going up. It will live within its overall means. The clubs don't necessarily live with the means, but if there's the global football market's worth, I don't know, X hundred billion pounds or whatever, it will operate within that. The second it goes outside of that, that's the problem. And it hasn't so far. And I don't think it will. So you might see a contraction, as I've said, but other than that,
would have its casualties.
Yeah.
I mean, even a modest contraction might have its casualties. So those clubs that are living beyond their means are more likely. So, you know, the Leeds United being a good recent example of a club that spent far more money than it had.
Yeah.
And then went down. What you might see is that clubs that haven't forecasted any kind of contraction in income find themselves in those kind of situations where they actually, if not go out of business, but certainly run out of money or unable to pay their existing players and tumble down the leagues accordingly. I suppose Sunderland is also an example of that, but of, if you like, for want of a better, poorly managed football clubs where the money dries up will still be poorly managed football clubs, but there'll be no additional money to save them. They'll just end up suffering. So that could happen. I mean, I don't think just because the bubble hasn't burst yet that it never will.
Yeah.
And it's always the thing about these things is these kind of things are always so difficult to conceive, even minutes or days or years before they happen, you know, and big civilizational changes down the years, you know, are often unforeseen.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you think up a few years ago, everything was sort of like fine, and then now everything's gone to shit.
Well,
this happens. This could happen.
A couple of episodes, we talked about the ITV digital collapse.
Yes.
And that's a very good example of when the rug gets pulled out from under your feet.
You think you've got your new normal, and then boom, and then it's gone. And we've all learned lessons from that, because I mean, people are still sceptical about how BT will last, how long they will last, even though they're a massive brand and, you know, a big company. But then our scepticism is informed by the ITV digital collapses. Yeah.
Especially when we've seen Satanta and now Satanta. 11 Sports.
Yeah, on their uppers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Did you guys hear that Susanna Dinic is no longer going to be the chief executive of the Premier League?
Yes.
I mean, that is significant.
Yeah.
Though I will speculate so far as that maybe she went for her onboarding day before she was due to start and then took one look at the place and said, no. But I mean, obviously something has persuaded her to do that. I don't think she said why, and I would imagine that probably the best thing to do is for her to not say why, because I don't imagine it's terribly pleasant. But we have to think about these things, because I mean, her background is television, obviously, for broadcasting, and she would presumably be expected to ramp up that income from the broadcasting revenue. And maybe she's looked at it and thought, there isn't many money left. So,
yeah,
you know, all the players aren't going to be there, or, you know, who knows? So that could be foreshadowing some, you know, a future apocalyptic event. Who knows?
Well,
in terms of football, obviously, not actual apocalypse.
Yeah. Because then we'd have bigger things to worry about with football.
You know, we would. But if the broadcasters are still operating this weekend, there's plenty of football to watch.
Good link. He's good as these.
Yeah, well, he wants to be. How? Do carry on.
Yes, I can, will do. The standout fixture of the weekend is Tottenham Man United. So I suppose this is when the we find out just how good Ole Gunnar Solskjaer actually is at management, isn't it?
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Five eminently winnable games, five wins, which I'm sure, you know, United fans will look at us and say, well, you know, we've had plenty of winnable games this season that we haven't won.
Yeah.
And yes, they're playing very, very well. But it should be a cracker, that Wembley, shouldn't it?
It should be. I mean, he should be right now absolutely shitting himself, because that's going to be a real, real tough task for them. And if they go then do something, then good luck to them. You know, it'd be great if it did happen. That would really give it a good narrative, wouldn't it? But yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. Very interesting.
It's going to need a lot more of a plan than kick it. Which I have a feeling that is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been his team taught since he's took over. Kick the ball, kick it, go on, kick it. You're really good at this. Go on, kick it, kick the ball, kick it in the goal. Go on.
Well, it's working.
Yeah, so, up to now.
Yeah, it was obviously better than whatever Jose Mourinho was saying, which we can only imagine. we're looking forward to seeing Jose Mourinho back in the job very, very soon, mm-hmm. for some ridiculous sum of money for a job that he's going to be very, very crap at.
Yeah.
There are plenty of other games as well this weekend, and if you want to see which ones we picked for the box set, get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, and you can sign up there. But that's it for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry Fellman, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Interesting. Did you guys hear that Susanna Dinic is no yes. longer going to be the chief executive of the Premier League?
Yes.
How?
She's sorry? Is that Dinic? They're not related.
I know.
And there's an extra N in her name.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you can leave that in if you want to. It's up to you.
How?
That's going to be the Easter egg, isn't it? So we can forget about saying anything else afterwards. We can just fuck off home. I'm not going to speculate about that, but I mean.